Previously on X-Friends.
Like bald guys, some bald guys in Hollywood. You got J.K. Simmons, but I mean, J.K. Simmons, Professor X, he's not going to be a pacifist.
No. How would you feel about Stanley Tucci?
Wow. Sassy Professor X.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean,
sure.
I could do it.
There's nothing that says Professor X can't have a personality, you know? It's always so pathetic to me, the idea of an asteroid destroying the planet. Magneto asteroid, Magneto comet, like it's big, but we're up there. We see how big it is. It ain't that huge, you know?
Magneto, who, by the way, still has three gigantic puncture holes in his right lung from Wolverine. Easy lifting for a wounded 65-year-old.
You can manipulate magnetic fields. So does that take like physical exertion? I understand mental exertion. Like if you want to say, okay, yes, this has like a big toll on you. But like at what point do their muscles come into play?
And we see Scott like just clench his ass cheeks together and say like, you're never going to mess with my family again. And he yells and he focuses harder and then his eye holes explode. And now I'm going to give you the final question. The one that I've been waiting all season for.
Oh, man.
If you were a mutant, what would your superpower be? Not the one that you want. What would it actually be based on who you are?
Wow. That's it would probably be something like, you know, super team building guy. like I would be good at like, you know, pulling people into projects and helping to encourage people. Because I'm not good at much else other than that, you know. So like I'd be like a Professor X type, just without the brain power.
Yeah, okay, I could see that. You know, I have two that are like equally not helpful. One is, it's not even like a character trait or anything. It's just when we go to like the supermarket or the movies, or if I'm on the freeway, anywhere where I have to pick a line, I pick the wrong one every time. So if you want to be, if you want to be late to something, just follow my lead. Even when we go to the store, I'm like, don't let me pick the line, because I'm going to pick the one that just, I pick it. And then somebody whips out a checkbook and it's like, it's 2024. Stop writing checks at the grocery store. It's like a reverse superpower. And then probably the other one would be this idea that's kicked around in my head of like writing a short story about the sonic sneeze, because I sneeze incredibly loud to where my neighbors have blessed me through the wall.
Wow.
So it's not a great one, but I mean, like if it was amplified into a superpower, it's like I could deafen my enemies or potentially like knock a door off its hinges with a superpowered sneeze.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us. I am Nick Scheist. You may remember me from the Scheist Podcast and Bad Movies We Love.
And I'm Seth Vargas of the Movie Friends Podcast.
And we decided to join forces. A team up, if you will, because X-Men 97 was so good, we just couldn't help ourselves.
That's right. So join us as we discuss our personal history with the comics, the films, and the collectible trading cards of the X-Men universe.
And of course, the catalyst for it all, X-Men 97.
To me, my X-Friends.
Welcome back. X-Friends has made its illustrious return. Seth, it's good to be back doing this again.
Are we back or are we forward? Whoa!
We are back and also technically in the future, so days of future past is an appropriate place to start.
Wowie. Okay, if you and I, if one of us was sent to the future and one of us was sent to the past, where would you want to go?
How far in the past? Egypt?
Oh, the two teams. Like we are part of two teams here.
I think my general interest in sort of ancient civilizations would be like, yeah, let's go to the past.
Okay. Definitely seems the team in the past has an upper hand on like the imminent danger that they're in. Like they're currently with the danger.
Yeah.
And the people in the future are just kind of almost dying all the time. So I think I would also opt for the past.
Yeah. Like their future in particular is not a good one. Obviously, in that future, like a lot of mutants have been killed or rounded up into camps at this point. So definitely not a great future for the X-Men there. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about our current would-be future for you and I in Earth 617 reality, I don't know that I want to go to that future either. Like I am a hopeful person in general. And, you know, I explained this to my wife and I was like, you know, the reason that I'm hopeful is because like you're my wife, right? Like your personality sort of makes me a hopeful person, even when she's like pessimistic about something. So although I'm hopeful, I'm not like willing to go maybe 2000 years in the future and find out where at least when I go to the past, I'm like, I kind of have an idea of what I'm dealing with because there is a history to pull from. So I can sort of wrap my head around that. But, you know, before we dive too far into this first episode, I did go back and watch the season one finale. And I went back and listened to our season one finale as well. And looking back.
And you thought, why am I doing this again? This is bad.
Yeah, this is exactly what I need is another project when I'm supposed to be on break for another 7 days. Mm-hmm. That aside, I love the show and I like doing the show with you. So I wanted to go back and, you know, give it a fair listen because that last episode we did like almost 2 hours. And a lot of it was sort of like we're brainstorming about things in the later half of the episode. So it's not super well edited. But again, I don't want to get too far into the editing stuff with this, but we look back at that season one finale and the episode starts with Charles and Eric having their sort of philosophical discussion on like the future of mutants and the existence and the sort of like fear of being outed as a mutant and like what that means, and Magneto's past with the Nazis gets brought up into that, and it's like a very interesting place to start. But also, like, we begin to pull out of that and we find out that Charles is assaulted Magneto's mind at this point, and he's like holding him hostage in this memory of them meeting so that he can try to appeal to the part of Magneto that he believes like will respond to reason and like give in to the fact that like humanity and mutants can live side by side. And got me thinking a little bit because we put out a poll. I don't remember if it was at the end of the season or at the middle of the season. I think it was at the end, but we asked people on Twitter at the time, between the two of us, who is Charles and who is Magneto? And you got voted Magneto, which is wild to me.
Crazy to me. That was like one of the things. Like, I was like, what do people think of me? My God. But okay, I was like, okay, fine. So like so the context of you and I is movie world.
Yes.
And so I was like, do people think of me as some kind of like purist, aggressive, idealist? Because what I really, really like about this version of Magneto is they make him so reasonable, and I truly feel that his ideals go toe to toe with Charles in any of the adaptations of the comics that I've seen. Like I'm like, oh yeah, like you're totally right. So much of the time. Your, you know, outworking of your rightness is a little rough, but I'm right there with you, man. You are part of an oppressed class and you do not need to ask for permission to exist and to live. And Charles is over here like, I don't know, maybe we should be nice to them. So, yeah, that was so shocking to me. That was so shocking. Well, not that I think of you as Magneto either, but it's like, just, yeah, wow.
So I'm wearing my Cyclops was right shirt, which actually comes from it comes from the Magneto was right posters, which we see a little bit of. I think it's in the first episode here with Kid Omega is wearing a Magneto was right shirt. And so the Cyclops thing sort of got perverted from the original Magneto one. But at the end of that first season, I was asking you like what your superpower would be if you were a mutant, and you started talking about like being super team building guy. So basically Charles without without the telepathy. Right. And so it's funny that like you pegged yourself as Charles and then people voted you as Magneto. But I will say, like, I was jealous. I was like, I want to be Magneto.
Yeah. You know, if I had an actual choice, I would opt for Charles's powers. Just because they're godlike. I mean, you know, Magneto is very powerful too, but it's more in a physical sense. What am I going to do? Like rob banks, you know?
I mean, yes, if I were Magneto, I would probably mostly be like vindictive with my powers and be like, you cut me off in traffic. Right. I'm going to like crunch your car. That would be me.
Well, I mean, my goodness. I think, my first altruistic thought was, all right, here we go. I'm going to every dump in the world, pulling out all the metals, getting some good recycling going. You know, I'd be a recycling guy.
Yeah. I mean, you could also just like throw all the garbage into the sun. I mean, like Magneto is way more powerful than just metal. Yeah, as begins to like get stronger and, you know, navigate electromagnetism and that kind of thing. Sure. So it begins to go like beyond earth-born powers, right? Yeah. But I did find it like interesting that's where that season ended. Like that's the conversation we have. That's the way that the vote went. And then where we pick up in season one with the team in the past is really like we're at the sort of core of the X-Men again, where Magneto and Charles, they're essentially lifelong debate in their friendship is about this specific issue. And now this issue is being applied to like the baby Apocalypse, not the baby, but like a young, not quite Apocalypse yet Apocalypse, where Magneto is very pro mutant. And like, we can sway this guy to do the things that we want. Like Charles, imagine. Right. And Charles is like, we've seen what this guy can do. What are you talking about? Why are you helping him? And so there's like, it's very interesting because it's like Magneto's pro mutant stance has now put him in the position of like, hey, this guy's a genocidal maniac, but like, I see the good in him. And Charles, who's typically the I see the good in you person, is like, he's a genocidal maniac.
Right. Right. It is a fun kind of predicament to put them into because of where we end, you know, in the last season. And now it's like, okay, now put this into practice. Yeah. You know? Like, okay, now here you go. Let's test your theories and let's test your philosophies. And let's also test your friendship right here with like literally the stakes of all stakes. This is not going back in time and killing baby Hitler. This is like, you know, space Hitler times 20. So what I don't like about it is that Eric, it's not like Apocalypse brings in a golden age for mutants. Like he's a bad guy across the board. So he is like, oh, but if we can utilize his power by influencing him for a day and then going back to our time and hoping he does right for 5,000 years, that seems below Eric's intellect. But also, you have to have a conflict for the show to exist. So, okay.
Yeah, nothing could possibly go wrong in 5,000 years.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, Apocalypse sleeps a bunch of the time anyway. You know, he's just regenerating. So heading into this season was interesting because, like, obviously we planned it. Obviously, timeliness is not our mutant superpower because we are behind again, but not as far behind. I will say we have improved by many months at this point.
Yeah.
And I went to the release party for the show at a bar out here in Hollywood with some of the cast, including Guy Agostini, who plays Sunspot, and Loren Zan, I think is her name, who plays Rogue, and Larry Houston also was there, who was the director of season one, is an executive producer, and I think a director on a few episodes of this season as well. So it was a very cool, like, X-Men centric party. It was the first three episodes that premiered on that night. There was a big long line out front, and I was like, I'm going by myself. Mm-hmm. I generally don't go to sort of like social events by myself like that. I've been better about it lately, trying to like do that more often. It was a very cool space to be in because the cast had only seen the first two episodes because they had done a screening at the Disney lot for the cast and crew. And so the first two episodes they had seen, but the third one was still going to be new to everybody in the building. And so that was a cool place to hang out and to watch it and to feel like the energy of the crowd and to like get the reactions in the room during the key moments in some of these episodes. So we're going to start, of course, with season two, episode one, Days of Future Past. And granted, this is like probably a nitpicky, stupid thing, but I am curious, how did they get their costume change in the future? Because they're wearing a very specific era of costumes where I'm like, in the first season, they like made a point that they're going back to their 80s attire when they needed to. And then in the future, they just had like extra wardrobes. And I was like, it's cool. I want to see those outfits. But they made time for a costume change.
I mean, you know, in the future, perhaps there's a museum to the X-Men and they just happen to have some of their, you know what I mean? Why not? I thought you were going to say the whole title because I sat down today and I was like, Days of Future Past. You know, I've heard that for what, most of my life, right? And I thought about it and I was like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, it's, does that just mean today? Like,
it's today, but it's the future, so it's today, the and also the past today.
Past, or is it that futures have passed? No, because it's not spelled tongue that way. So it's just today. So Days of Future Past means nothing, but it sounds cool. Sounds very cool.
It does indeed. And, you know, the more I thought about this episode, the more I sort of focused in on this being an episode that is in many ways about parenting. And you yourself are a father and you have two kids. And did those themes resonate, you know, powerfully with you? Because as a Cyclops fan and a fan of sort of like the tumultuous nature of his relationship with his wife and his son and his wife's clone and his brother who ends up dating his wife's clone as well, there's a lot of stuff going on in Scott Summers' life, and I find him to be a very fascinating character. But the emphasis on sort of like his and Jean's parental responsibility to this son that they sort of don't really know is like one of the key elements of this first episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also, you know, my wife's name is Jean, so
look at that.
I will say, like, yes and no. No, because I've never sent my infant son into the future
to live,
you know, a life where he can survive a very specific cyborg virus.
You haven't done it yet.
So, well, yeah, I mean, these could be the Days of Future Past. So in that way, no. But the idea of, and I don't even remember if it's in this episode or Okay, wait, hold on. This is Nick, edit this part out later. Are we talking about one episode at a time? I forget. Are we doing all yes. three?
We'll do, I'll just pause in between and then we'll switch to the
okay.
other one.
Is this where, no, this isn't where they're on the train yet. No, this is where they decide to take them away. Okay, okay.
Yes.
Later on, there is like a discussion that I was like, oh yeah, totally. Literally been there quite recently, actually. The idea that they are willing to risk everything to be honest with him. I was like, okay, I kind of understand that, but also you did meet him later on down the road and it's okay. So don't mess that up. If this was the only, they're like, oh my God, we sent him away and we don't know what's going to happen. But it's like, you met Cable and he's super cool and he had a nice conversation with you and you had your big goodbye. So for Gene to just be like, I'm going to risk everything. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, it is like an interesting thing for Gene specifically because it's Madeline's kid. But Jean shares the memory and Nightcrawler like talks to her specifically about this, I think, at end of season one, where like if you share the memory of it happening, like if you remember it, is it any less right. real? And so I think like Jean being a mom, but not like having birthed Nathan, struggles a little bit with that of like she feels like she wants a deeper connection with him than she's been able to have. To that point. And, you know, when they have their goodbye and you get that line about Cable saying, like, you know, the legends about my parents didn't do them justice. And then we get to see them all fighting together. It's like we really get to see like, hey, the Summers family itself could be like their own X-Men squad.
Sure.
And they don't really like even necessarily need anybody else. Yeah. You throw Havoc in there, get Madeline in there, even Nate Gray, who becomes X-Man. Later in the storylines, you could get him in there too. You got a good squad with just the Summers.
Yeah.
There is a character in this which is the Fire Lady, which is like Lady Akasha. Even though I watched the episode three times, I didn't memorize her character name at this point.
I did write it down.
But she is the fire wielding pyrokinetic. Old lady, and you get this scene with her and Scott, where Scott is it's basically like questioning fate, and a lot of this episode is about
Mother
fate.
Ascani. Yeah,
Ascani. Thank you, I was close. Scott goes to interrogate her about like how do you know what's best for Nathan? Like you're making this about this prophecy, and who knows if the prophecy is true, and. Like, I get where he's coming from, and they have, like, an interesting conversation about sort of the nature of time. And time travel stories are always complex, especially when, like, you're trying to actually sort of make it connect. You know, we talked about this in Film Club, where it's like you can have Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which is a great, fun time travel movie, Hot Tub Time Machine, or you have to do, like, Interstellar. Primer, like really try to explain the time travel. And I feel like this is sort of on the looser side where it's sort of like a trust me, bro, kind of time travel.
Yes. And then, you know, a little bit later, a new idea is kind of introduced that Charles experiences. And so there is a lot of like, hey, maybe there are forces at play that are a lot larger than what we've revealed. So just calm down.
Yeah. So the lady, Mother Ascani, at the end of her conversation with Scott, one of my favorite moments in the whole episode after rewatching it several times, she sort of like dismisses him out of hand and then just like flips her ass back upside down into her like glowing fire yoga. And that, like, the more I watch it, the more funny I think it is, because Scott's like very intent on disproving her, and she is very intent on her meditation.
right
Very, very funny stuff. I think maybe more funny in this season that I've seen so far. And found out too that one of the writers is a friend of one of my very good friends, J.B. Ballard is one of the writers on the show, wrote this episode, actually, or was one of the writers on this episode. So I'm going to be curious. I'm going to pick up that phone and see if I can get J.B. to come and talk to us here on the show as maybe our special guest for the end of this season. We get Bone Claws Wolverine here in the future.
Yep.
We see him getting frustrated with breaking his bone claws a little bit. But I do love that even with the bone claws, Wolverine, like, he puts exclamations on his thoughts, or at least his statements, by popping out the claws every time. It's a very specific character trait. When he's talking about at the end of season one, where he's talking about like having to kill Magneto, he's like, this only ends one way. Stink, you know, or snicked, I believe is the comic writing. So I don't know if the bone, I don't know if the bone claws make the same sound or if it's more organic sounding, yeah, like a twig.
It would be more like a gooey Cronenberg, like. Sorry to anyone listening with headphones. That was disgusting. But.
Yeah, for the ASMR crowd out there. Sorry about that. but I do like that we've managed to sort of keep Wolverine as more of a background character and focus on some of these other characters. You know, Wolverine had his 10 movies or however many movies it was. It was a lot, right? It was the first X trilogy, the second X trilogy, the Wolverine trilogy as well, then Logan, then Deadpool and Wolverine, which you and I talked about and we're on, you know, somewhat opposite sides of the fence for that one. But yeah, there's been a lot of Wolverine in our lives for the last two decades ish, because the first X-Men was 2000, right?
Yep.
Hugh Jackman's been Wolverining for 26 years.
26 years.
So
there's no end in sight, possibly.
I mean, when you don't age like a normal person, you got that healing factor, you just keep coming back. But it is nice to see that he sort of has his place within the X team and is not constantly the focal point. I think where the show is in episode one, we see a lot of focus on Cyclops. He's the leader, as we should. A lot of focus on Storm, which she is another, like, she was a, I think, blue team or gold team when they separated in the 90s. She was one of the leaders of the X-Men. Very powerful. They're giving her a lot to do. We see her do some, like, crazy weather witch things.
Love it.
Where she goes into space, right?
Yeah, love it.
Or at least into the atmosphere and commands the sun, the power of the sun. And when she talks to Mother Ascani about it, she tells Storm at the time, like, this other version of you, I've seen do these incredible things, so I know that you can do it. And so, like, it takes me back to this notion of fate. And in a time travel story, that's very important. I mean, you look at Terminator, no fate but what we make, right? And so would you make the same decision faced with knowing the outcome if the decision is like still just in your heart, or would you change based on like the a prophecy? And that sort of like is, I think, one of the central theses of this particular episode is what you said, like Scott and Jean know Cable like survives and continues to fight Apocalypse, and he's cool. I mean, I'm sure he's dealing with tons of trauma, but like, hey, he's
but who
he's alive,
isn't,
right?
They're the X-Men. Like, okay. Sorry, you don't get to go
Scott
outside
should
and
know.
Throw a baseball with, like, you know. When Morph shows up with that baseball, I was like, not the time. Like, ever. What do
read
you
read the
mean?
Room, Morph.
Yeah, like, please. And they're like, yes, you should go have fun. It's like, actually, no. But anyway.
Well, what was the dead horse that you wanted to kick or that you need to kick in this episode?
It doesn't come up until next episode, but I do want to point out,
I'll tease it.
There is a fantastic thing. Now, as I watched these episodes today, I should say, I haven't watched a lot of superhero material in between like the last time we did this and now. And this was so refreshing to me. And I actually said to my gene, it's like, you know why this works? Because they take it so seriously. Storm talks to the sun, and it is like she's like praying to God. Earnestly, seriously. They let Beast be this like big blue giant guy. And, you know, he's sure he's like, blast these robots, but he's still speaking poetically. Like, there's so little winking. These are fantastical characters, but they are acting as deadly serious as you would if you were in this situation. And it made me realize, like, oh, this type of material does work. It works when you give it the respect that it deserves and you treat it like a real story. And I know that that's really stupid to say because these are like comic books, you know, like it's silly. They can be very serious and the material can be very good and it's very good storytelling. It's fantastic art. So I'm not saying like, oh, we shouldn't take them seriously, but I just think that this is one of the great examples of like how this can work. And as we're preparing for the X-Men to return in new forms, not really in the movies.
Days I'm of like, future past indeed.
Please do this. Like, please do this. You have this now. You can see how good this is. Don't go back to, you know, again, like Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, do something. Give these characters. I mean, you know, Cyclops, I don't think he's goofy at all in this. I take him very seriously. You see his struggles, but you also see his capabilities. He's not some guy who's like fumbling around. He is their leader and he can do things. So, yeah. Okay, but having said all that, as much as I do appreciate this show, and I do think it is like a really high watermark, although that might be a low bar as of late for comic book adaptations, there is such a funny thing that happens in these episodes where they keep saying, we got to get the X-Men back to the 90s.
Yes. So I'm glad you brought it up because
I think it happens in all three episodes. Like,
I think it does, or some version of that.
It is, but to me, like, that is really funny because it's not even necessarily a joke. It's just a funny thing to kind of like put into this two like really serious, you know, the two conflicts that are happening in the past and in the present, which is the fight over a young man's soul. It's just that one is the hero and one is the villain, and perhaps the two will crossover in time and meet somewhere in the middle, perhaps the 90s, I don't know, but like that's a very serious thing. And you see like these two sets of parents, right? So you see Charles and Eric, and they're one set of parents and they have the troubled kid, and then you have Jean and Scott and they have another kid who is like the gifted kid. And like, which tactic, you know, manipulation of the troubled kid or full on earnest, we love you. We love you. You're special. what philosophy is kind of going to like win out? So I love all that. And I just love that they insert over and over and over again, we got to get the X-Men back to the 90s. Oh my God. I was laughing.
I think that's the appropriate response because, I mean, like when I was in a crowded bar full of strangers watching this, when Bishop says that the first time, the crowd went crazy. They loved it, but it was like you could tell it was like hooting and hollering. But also like I think they acknowledged the sort of silliness of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I did read an interesting article, not related to the X-Men, but that younger generations have a nostalgia for the 90s, even though they didn't live through it. Yeah. And it was a very interesting sort of piece that I read, and I don't have like all of the details memorized, but to see that the show, obviously, when it was made for us when we were kids, was a kid show, right? They couldn't do certain things. They had to sort of pull their punches. And you'd mentioned earlier, like, that the X-Men taking, or the creators of the show taking this very seriously and presenting it very seriously. And as far as like the pantheon of great comic books, the X-Men has some of like the most important stories, I think, in Marvel. The X-Men carried Marvel comics for a while there during the 90s because it was that good. And we're going to see more of that, but so this show is made for both the kids that watched it when we were growing up, and they're treating us like adults now, which is very nice. Yeah. But it's also resonating with younger audiences that haven't seen it before and are getting to really see like the X-Men not sort of be goofy and not be silly. Like the early version of the show like does take some things seriously, but also is significantly just goofier in nature. I mean, there's an episode where like Wolverine like starts sobbing, I think, because he's like remembering his past and his like his claws are melting. He's having a weird psychedelic experience. There's another one where like Charles needs help and Beast just like swings into a tree and sits on the branch like staring at him. So there's a lot of like those kinds of things that happen in the older version of the show. But because you brought up Beast, I do want to ask you, why does he wear glasses? Is it a style thing? Because everything about him is enhanced, right?
Right.
You would think Beast Vision would be able to like read a tablet or something, but he still wears his glasses.
Right. I mean, eyes are strange, you know? Perhaps his eyes are enhanced, but like they're enhanced like an animal's would be, where can an animal read up close?
I don't
know. Like maybe Beast can see like super, super far away. But then he's no good up. I don't know.
I'm gonna need to read up on Beast's eyesight because you know everything else is pretty good for Beast. But we do get the moment too. I think there's a lot of stuff in it for the audience. Like, I don't know if they know, but there's sort of like a communal thing happening, and the X-Men is obviously a team.
Yeah.
They're a group of people, but like watching it in a crowded bar where everybody's there for the same reason, everybody's excited for the same reason. And then they finally do get Storm to power up the ship. They get onto the train after Cable is just like, oh, my power nullifying collar, whatever. I'm just going to overpower that. And I'm like, wait, couldn't Jean have just done that? Like if she's it's a teaching moment arm for the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cyborg arm. Don't ask too many questions. But they break into the train and they're confronting the bad guys in this, which are some of the weird horsemen, including like the Civil War drummer. Don't know. Apocalypse obviously got him from.
I had no idea who any of these mutants were. And I was just like, yep, sure. Yep. I was waiting for like one of them to be just like a Jack in the Box or something like.
It's like, please make them weirder. Make them weirder. That's what I want. Like,
it's like that episode of the Twilight Zone of the toys that are in the bucket and like they don't know that they're toys in a bucket. You know, where it's all just like very specific characters. I was like, wow, this is my favorite. Like Apocalypse really went all out. And he's like, nope, I'm only picking like the elite skins.
Magic carpet guy, you're coming with me.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
But they're in the, before the fight starts, you get the moment where the bad guys are like, well, who the hell are you? Right. Mm-hmm. And Scott gets to say, well, in our time, we were called the X-Men. And then the fight starts. But the crowd went nuts. Yeah. And like, I love that moment in the show because like they have this level of respect. And I think we talked about this in the first season of the show, too, seeing like a mature X-Men versus mm-hmm. what we saw in the movies where there was like, OK, some of them are like at a level of maturity. A lot of them are kids in the X-Men of like learning their powers, whether it's yeah. like Iceman, Pyro, Shadowcat. Yeah. A lot of them are young. Colossus is super young. So it's a lot of there's a couple of veterans and a lot of kids. But in this case, it's like almost all of the X-Men are on the team are like adult veterans that have been in these situations for a long time. So when they show up and they're like, we're going to kick your ass. It's like, oh, yeah, they probably are because the X-Men are legitimate. And one of my biggest takeaways watching like the first three as a bundle was. The X-Men, I think, would kick the shit out of the Avengers.
Yes, yeah.
I think they would easily beat yeah. the Avengers. And it's going to be very interesting now that, like, Doomsday is coming. We're going to get the X-Men. Obviously, like, the trailer that we saw is Thor complaining a lot about the new team kind of being, you know, losers. Yeah. So it will be interesting because you're getting Fantastic Four. You're getting X-Men. We'll see. We'll see. But, It's probably too far away from 97 for X-Men versus Avengers to be done in the show. But man, would that be a fun story to watch? I know the comic wasn't like super well received at the time, but there's some really good stuff in the comic.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. You know, throwing Thor and the Hulk in there, that's always like, okay, well. Not much you can do about them.
I mean, Charles should be able to stop the Hulk pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
You're Bruce Banner. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah, okay, that's true. I don't often think of Charles as part of the team. You know, like...
That's fair. He's like, he's very much not in combat a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But he should... He's there to lecture.
He should... And to teach. Like, just come along for the ride. If we need you, it'd be better to have you than not, you know? And then, yeah, actually, yeah, now that I think about, you know, Jean and the Phoenix Force, it's like, well, okay, yeah, never mind. Actually, they'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, Rogue is probably going to just like, you know, she could walk through the Avengers almost by herself.
Yeah, and Thor does show up for a second.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this. Does Morph, I don't know if this is the case, but does Morph absorb the powers of the person that he becomes?
We talked about this last season and we were like,
we don't know, I guess
like maybe at which point he is actually the most powerful.
Yeah.
He would be the most powerful because then he could just morph into Charles and Jean and use all their powers. So, but he doesn't appear to be that way. So I don't know.
Yeah, because there is another X-Men that that was featured in one of the big storylines from the Krakoan comic era, who I can't remember his name, but his power is like basically that, except for he doesn't like shapeshift. He just sort of absorbs the power of whoever is next to him. So they send him in with teams where they need like a little bit extra of this, or it's like, oh, that way if somebody goes down, like he's still there to have their power set. So yeah, I am curious with maybe he just can't sustain it for very long. It's like you get 3 seconds of shapeshifting and then you gotta shift out.
Right. Yeah, that does seem like something that they aren't interested in fully explaining, which is fine, because then, you know, Thor shows up and hits somebody for a second and whatever.
I mean, really what I think it is, it's a great way for them to include other Marvel name drops, basically, to be like, oh, look, it's Thor and it's the Hulk and it's all these characters that we want to see in the show that are just not quite here yet. But we're going to give you a little bit of that by having Morph. Like if he switched into Spider-Man, would he be able to shoot the webs?
Right.
Or would he just look like Spider-Man?
Right. And what part of Morph's powers is physical or perceived? Now, I know that that's like really going far into like territory that we can't answer. But like, is it that the person perceives him as Thor? And I don't know. Before we move on, I had one other point about this episode.
Yep.
Forge's powers.
Forge. Yep.
Yeah. He can build anything.
Yep.
Okay. Does he have super strength?
I don't know. He's got like just buff man strength, I guess.
Because as Forge was running around,
he does have a cybernetic leg
out of the way. at one point he's laying down and his body is just like perfect, right? Like, and I put in my notes, Forge would have to be working out at an incredible rate, just in the gym nonstop. Like, Forge is working out all the time.
He built new gym equipment that does it faster.
And that's possible. And I thought of that too. I was like, maybe he has nanobots inside of him that like just work out his muscles. But like, Forge, I feel like they, it's like they want a little bit too much with Forge. Forge should be like, you know, an Otto Octavius character.
He's in the lab more than he's in
not
the field,
like,
but we get a lot of Forge.
Able.
Like,
fair. Hey, fair. I could also arm wrestle Cyclops. Like, no. I don't think, but you know what? Sure, whatever.
Oh, well, next time I get some of the, maybe the cast, or maybe we talk to the writer, JB, at some point down the road, or, you know, I have the contact information for the writers of the original show, too. So, I mean, granted, they didn't create Forge, but there are a lot of questions to be asked about these powers, yeah. And this hat that I'm wearing, actually, we went to LA Comic-Con last year, and so this is Sunspot. We've got Larry Houston right here.
Very cool.
Matthew Watterson. So we got Magneto, the two writers of the original series. Who else we got? Morph is on here somewhere. Original Jean Grey is on here as well. So this hat ended up costing like $300. But
oh my.
Well, it's all signatures, you know?
God.
Whereas if I just meet these people at an event and probably sign it for free, but because right. It's Comic-Con, yeah.
Right.
Look, they got to get paid.
Is that where you're going to break it?
I get it. All right, we'll see you. We'll see you for episode 2, A Force to be Reckoned With. Thanks for checking out the show and becoming an X-Friend. Hopefully you'll join us on our journey through X-Men 97 and beyond. X-Friends is a Movie Friends and Bad Movies We Love co-production and part of the Scheist Podcast Network, hosted by Seth Vargas and me, Nick Scheist. You can find all of our contact info and socials in the show notes, and you can email the show directly at xfriends@thescheist.com. That's the letter x-friends@thescheist.com. So until next time, let us do what we do, believe not in a dream or our gifts, but in each other.